be cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Well, hello. I don't know why I had that devious laugh. Maybe because it's Thursday. Maybe because I'm just a crazy person for this time of year as a sports fan and somebody fortunate enough to get to do this. Maybe I'm just insane. One never knows. Either way, welcome to Crunch Time. Thursday, 95.3 The Score. Oregon's on a bye. One of my favorite weeks of the year. I know that sounds nuts, but consider the source. Have you been wearing a sweatshirt or a jacket all day?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, Nick just unveiled a t-shirt. That might be the coolest shirt you have.
Thank you.
The San Francisco Seals. Where the heck did you get that?
Somebody sent it to me for my birthday.
There's a birthday party for me here.
I don't know. I think so. It's from Ebbets Fields Flannels. They do a lot of like throwback, like early turn of the century baseball stuff. And I think they were having a t-shirt deal, and my friend's girlfriend got one for her boyfriend and also got one for me. And I think it was a birthday present or something.
Man, you see, the weird thing is that would go over well in New York, too, because for an older generation, familiar with Joseph, Dom, and Vince DiMaggio, that's the first professional team one Joseph Paul DiMaggio ever played for. Legendary. Just for baseball fans. By the way, jot that down. I want to check out that site for cool throwback t-shirts.
The t-shirts are pretty cool. The jerseys, though, very expensive because they're like they're authentically made with flannel and like hand stitched, and they're like pushing $200+ for like. I mean, it's an authentic, really nice jersey if you get one, but they're really expensive.
So if you're paying attention, my birthday's a week from tomorrow. I wear a small.
No, thank you.
Not I didn't mean you. I mean anybody who's paying attention.
If you're buying, I'm an XL, so just, if you're going to buy one, buy two, right?
I don't know why this showed up on my Twitter timeline, but somebody just made a joke of it. So there's a guy called the Orange Army with a picture of a beaver. He's obviously a big OSU fan. I don't know how this started. It's within the last hour. It says the following here, because I'll tell you what, delusion, whether it's in any walk of life, at a certain point, it's like, wow, you really just facts, whatever, just doesn't get in the way of what you want things to be like. Here's the quote. Beavers own the Ducks in baseball, men's basketball, and women's basketball. Only a matter of time before Beavers own the Ducks in football. So, let's, in the sports vernacular, what does own mean? How do you define own? Because that seems like a little bit of a diluted reach. And I'm not going to respond to the person. They're obviously crazy and should be put away in a home somewhere. But men's basketball, a team that's made the tournament once since 1990. And has seen Oregon, I mean, how many Elite Eight Sweet 16s, a Final Four? And let's also not forget, Oregon State, as many of you know, I am not an OSU hater. When it comes to this conference, if I had to use the H word, Oregon State would be way near the bottom. You know, Huskies, screw them. Washington State, screw them. USC in football and Arizona in basketball, UCLA in basketball are much bigger threats. But that's why people turn into like, oh, F those guys. Are you kidding me? What has Oregon State in the modern era, and by that I mean since ESPN, so we're past, you know, we just had the 40th anniversary of ESPN, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you one better. since UCLA's dynasty, when, you know, they really helped in a lot of ways put the big dance on the map. So Oregon State, you know, the Ralph Miller era. All right, here you go. So they made the Elite Eight. Oh, no, that's a semifinal. They made the Sweet 16 in 1975, the Elite Eight in 1982, before the brackets expanded, and they haven't won a tournament game since. So that's going on 39 years. I have some really bad news for you, Oregon State basketball fans. You don't own anything. You can't even rent. Your credit's bad. You know that commercial we do? You're living in the broom closet. They've designated apartment 4AA. Never use that word again. Women's program, awesome. Made a Final Four in the conversation. By the way, Oregon right now has matched any run in OSU program history with Elite Eight, Final Four. And baseball, okay. You got that one. Congratulations. Football, please. Just go. Just leave. Leave the... No. Security, escort these people out of the room, please. They're no longer allowed to be part of the conversation. So, what is so welcoming about desperation and ignorance? And by the way, I had no intention. I didn't even know this existed. I just happened to open my Twitter account before we signed on, and it's like... Wow, that's a pretty dumb statement. And on Twitter, I mean, let's face it, there's world dumb and then there's Twitter dumb. Tweedledum and Tweedledee and Twitter dumb and Tweedledee. So, nice. We've got things today. What do things mean? Aaron Fentress at the bottom of the hour from The Athletic. We'll be talking with Paul Swangard. Those of you around here familiar, his days at KZI, Warsaw, over at the U of O, the voice of Hayward Field. He's on the East Coast prepping to cover the IAAF World Championships in track and field in Qatar this weekend starting tomorrow. We'll talk with him. It's a Thursday. We'll have lightning round. At the end of the 4 o'clock hour, we'll have some talking trash. So your calls, we got things going on. Don't sell us short just yet. We're tremendous slouches. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also chime in via the text line, 321-0824. Hit us up on Twitter at 953 the score for the station, at Sports Talk 953 for me and for Nick, wearing his San Francisco Seals t-shirt and just winning all kinds of cool gear contests early on. 9 minutes into the show, he leads. Let's go to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, bring in Bill. Bill, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going great, Steve. How are you today?
All right. What's up?
Well, I'm just chuckling as you're talking about Tweedledum and Twitter dumb and remember, you know, fan is short for fanatic, which most true fanatic fans aren't the smartest tools in the shed. But I just wanted to respond. The other day, the other Steve was making the comment about Evan Weaver from Cal, the linebacker.
Yeah,
that I think is just an absolute phenomenon. As you probably, I mean, I've called several times. I'm a proud Cal grad, but I was the happiest guy in the world when Cal hired Justin Wilcox, because after the debacle with Sonny Dykes and his lack of defensive prowess, it was embarrassing watching Cal lose 55-49 year, week after week after week. But I was very surprised. The other day I ran into Nick Aliotti over at Eugene Country Club when I was over there dropping off my dues payment, and I, you know, he and I chat every now and again, and I was asking him about what he thought how Weaver's first few games were, and I was blown away when he said that he was very complimentary, but he said he did not yet think he was NFL quality material. and believe me, Nick Aliotti has forgotten more about football this morning than I've ever known in my lifetime, but I was very surprised by that statement, and I just kind of wanted to think, or wanted to get your grasp on what you think about his prospects as an NFL, you know, player, because I think they're quite high.
First of all, Bill, I just need to point out that you had to make a special trip to drop off your dues at Eugene Country Club. Were you escorted with, like, an armored car to make the substantial dues payment?
No.
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
Well, yes, but they're not that high. Goodness sakes.
I'm only kidding.
And I break mine into two payments each month, so it's not quite as painful.
All right.
Anyway.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Take it easy. I can't say I'm as wired in to Evan Weaver. I know when we spoke with Todd McKim prior to the game last year, he singled him out. And, you know, obviously this past weekend you heard his name mentioned because with that hectic finish against Ole Miss with the completion, then the short out that did not score, setting up the final play where he crashed from the outside and, you know, put the thing on ice. You know, it seems that every time I watch Cal, I'm like, wow, this guy is legit. And one of the reasons his name stood out is because I have family in Eastern Washington in Spokane, and you know, that's where he's from. He went to Gonzaga Prep, and I mean, he also was a guy who, coming into this year, he walked onto the field in 2016 and started playing. I think coming into this year, he had missed maybe one game due to injury. He's their active career tackle leader. He's probably going to wind up in the all-time top five for the school. You know, he's a captain, and he was a preseason biathlon second team, AP The Athletic, Sports Illustrated, an All-American honor. And that's the first time that a Cal player had been picked during the preseason as that much of a standout since Jahvid Best 10 years ago. And so as far as his not being NFL ready, I think Bill brought up a good point that I'll probably concede defensively to Coach Aliotti. Like what I'm seeing, probably come a little bit more to fruition come draft day. I mean, at his size, tell you the truth, maybe as a guy who's listed as an inside linebacker at 230, 235, that's not NFL size. I guess the question would be, does he have the speed to maybe play outside? Maybe it's a commentary on what position he's playing now in college. He might not translate flawlessly to the professional level. So there's a lot of ways to go with that. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. That's a really big game for Cal. They're hosting Arizona State, who, you know, with the freshman quarterback going into Berkeley, an unbeaten team, a ranked team, with Jaden Davis. And it's just Arizona State off of a tough loss at Colorado, where they appeared. Jaden Daniels, sorry. That's going to be the late one. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, again, you can hit us up via the text line, 3210824. What have you come across? Is there something you'd like to share?
So, Gardner Minshew. We're all familiar with him, yes, the story, everything about him. I'm over everybody just mentioning Gardner Minshew, and then the next thing that comes out of their mouth is just like his entire life backstory, because I've heard it so much, actually, right, like paying attention to college football last year and then, you know, everything this year. It's becoming too much. Anyways, people with Minshew's mustache have thought that he looks like Uncle Rico from, not super bad, Napoleon Dynamite. Super niche, weird comedy
movie. I saw it when it came out. I mean, I should say, back then, I bet you I rented the DVD when it came out. But I don't think I've seen it since.
Well, everybody's been saying that Minshew looks like Uncle Rico, and they found Uncle Rico, and they brought him out to a Jags practice, or he made his way to a Jags practice. Uncle Rico looks beat up, man. He looks more like an Uncle Rico now than he did playing Uncle Rico. I mean, that movie must have been 15 years ago, at least.
If it was 10 years ago, I'm shocked. If it was at least 2004, 15 years ago. So, at the time there were films like Rushmore, and it was when everything wasn't a big blockbuster from a major studio. There was a lot of independent movies being made, and they were kind of a little bit out there, kind of dry humor with like Jason Schwartzman and the Royal Tenenbaums, and just this kind of offbeat Uncle Rico, huh?
He just he looks like a beat up, like if you were to be like, oh yeah, that's my Uncle Rico, you'd be like, yeah, that's exactly what I would expect an Uncle Rico to look like.
His name, well, this might explain a lot why he's looking a little rough these days.
Oh no.
He's 3 years older than me.
Oh.
So he's going to be 60. He's 62 years old right now.
So he's Grandpa Rico.
Yeah.
Which is a completely,
yeah, he's graduated
your
from, Uncle
Rico.
From Uncle to Grandpa Rico. By the way, on I just happened to bring it up on IMDb, and it got like a 6.8. I would say overall, probably most people would not rave over that movie, but kind of for the... I'll put it into it, probably has a pretty big cult following.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Vote for Pedro shirts were like the biggest things when I was in junior high, like when that... Because that movie came out and I was still in elementary school, but for some reason it started to blow up when I was in junior high, and probably when it came out on DVD or something. I don't know how things got popular if they weren't in a movie theater back then, because I just wasn't aware of how it happened. But everybody had to have a Vote for Pedro shirt or something like that, or you know, you were Napoleon for Halloween or whatever. It was like the world, the biggest thing in the world was Vote for Pedro and the song and the dance and everything like that, and playing tetherball. It was just
tetherball.
Oh, the end scene of the movie, they're playing some like classic like end of like 80s rom-com song or whatever, because they're out in the middle of like Utah or something, or Montana, and him and the girl are just out there and they're playing tetherball, and Napoleon Dynamite's just looking like just weirdo Napoleon Dynamite playing tetherball. It's really weird,
man. Tetherball.
Oh,
I don't
such
know.
A fun game.
Oh, that was because I went to day camp and worked at a day camp. Tetherball was huge. We used to have tournaments, and back then in bunk G41, like a zillion years ago, in the not even the mid 70s, I just realized I stopped being a camper in like 73 or something. It always came down to me, Bruce Resnick, and Scott Walker. We were like the badass tetherball players at Camp Veritans.
Oh, you had to.
By the way, Scott Walker, not the nitwit politician, a buddy of mine from Wayne, New Jersey.
My elementary school, you had to get the right tetherball too. Some of them were really flat, and like even with like, you know, your little like elementary school hands, you could like palm it
because
it was just so deflated or broken. Others had like ropes on them that were just way too long, or they were way too short, so you'd have to like climb up the tetherball pole to get them chained up there. Like the tall kid would have to put it up, and then because like the tall kid helped, he got to play first in line, and you couldn't block with the rope or do any rope throws or anything like that. And oh, such a serious sport, man.
First, you had to sign up. And then I remember our counselor would always try and like bracket it out. So like the three of us would like be in the finals. And it was always like the big semifinal. One of us would get the break that because, you know, you're probably going to make it into the final. And always be like, get the right draw. Oh, Now it's going to be a tough semifinal and maybe a tough final. It's like the selection committee. Yeah, you know, we had Vital and Billis talking the selection committee. Yeah, Walker and Tannen got the good draws this time. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So another innie last night as the Milwaukee Brewers. So at this point, we know who's in the National League. And there's actually not all that much to be determined. The divisions are all... St. Louis lost yesterday. Milwaukee won. The Brew Crew were only a buck and a half out. Now, a game and a half a week ago is obviously tenable. But with Milwaukee winning already today, I think... today, the final Thursday, there's always a bunch of matinees. So they are now 89-70, three games left, and they will absolutely enter this weekend just one game behind St. Louis for the Central lead. Wouldn't it be ironic after all we talked about all summer long and the mayhem that could end up being the wild card and a play-in game to be a play-in game to be a play-in game that if Milwaukee just walked away or Washington and it ended up being a play-in game for the division to get a bye. So you'd have to play a game. The winner is automatically into the league championship series. The loser has to play the next day in a wild card.
It's exactly
that would be neat.
That's exactly what happened last year with the NL Central with the Brewers involved. Won the division on game 163, got a huge boost because they didn't have to play in a wild card game, made it to the NLCS, and the Cubs were just like, we were kind of all in on the whole win in the division thing. We don't really have a plan for the wild card game, guys. Good luck. And then, you know, now John Madden's going to get fired. Joe Madden.
So, and by the way, the Cubbies who have stumbled in is a gross understatement. They could play spoiler. They could, I think they could knock St. Louis all the way out. No. The worst they could do is a wild card. It just dawned on me, like, no, bad math. Usually a strong suit, but in this case, bad math. Bad mathematician. So Cleveland, who could be playing for their lives, they play the Nationals this weekend. Wow. Where you've got the Cubbies and Cardinals and three games left and still the Brewers, I guess. Who's kidding who? They get to play Colorado. And, yeah, while Coors Field might be an X factor, it's not playing Washington, Cleveland, or St. Louis. All right.
What? How do they determine who gets home field in the wild card game if both of the teams in the wild card game have the same record? Because I think it could work out where St. Louis, Washington,
is
and
it
Milwaukee
head to head?
Maybe all have the same record at the end of the year, and so you would have St. Louis and Milwaukee playing a game 163 to win the division, which I guess would give them the one half game lead, which would mean that Washington would go from running away with we're going to host the wild card to holy crap, the Brewers showed up out of nowhere to oh wow, we're the visitors for the wild card game now.
No, that would mean that this last week didn't go well for the Cubs, but it didn't go great for the Nats. All right, we need to actually get to a phone call because we need to take a break and we've got a guest all lined up. So, we're going to hang on, take a break, and I guess we're going to go to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Brad. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Steve. So, ever since you picked the Nats to win it all, that's when they started really not doing well. I just had to say that. So do you think that they have a chance even in the one-game playoff series? Like, I'm thinking it's going to be Milwaukee, and they seem to be hot. I mean, it'll come down to pitching and if Scherzer pitches or – I mean, I don't know. It's just hard to say.
Any of those three. I mean, I think that they've got as good a front three as anybody this side of Houston. That's one of the reasons I was like, hey, once they're in – On any given day, I mean, Corbin is a terrific pitcher. Scherzer and obviously Strasburg. I give them a puncher's chance against anybody.
Yeah, the bullpen's weak though.
That's history.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. It's always been kind of the Achilles heel of the team, and of course they have their past playoff failures to fall back on for sure.
Seems like a bad thing to lean on.
Well, and what is up with them ending the season against Cleveland? I mean, like, do you ever remember a meaningful end of the
Never.
Season series being interleague play?
No, I think because of the it had to have happened since Houston became an American League team. I just think it's a ridiculous coincidence that the two interleague teams also were in dogfights to make the postseason.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I haven't looked, but I assume it's probably the only interleague series that's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we checked that.
Yeah. Crazy.
All right. Thanks.
All right, man. Thanks
a lot, Brad. Right, now we really need to take a break, and we'll come back. We'll have an update, and we'll get to Aaron Fentress next, 95.3 The Score.
Brewers, magic number one, want to take it in their own hands. Here's Junior Guerra. Guerra deals, and a bouncing ball. This is Spangenberg, and there it is! The Brewers will punch a ticket to the postseason. For the first time in 37 years, the Brewers are going to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons.
It's a long time. And I could attest to the fact that that was the only other time that they went to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. And one of those years, 1981, was the strike season, where they won the second half of the AL East. As we welcome you back to Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score. Lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Folks, we've pretty much have the day nailed down. The time, well, we're flexible. Either way, it's that time we get our view from the north. With the now streamlined job title, covering Oregon and the Seahawks for The Athletic. Again, subscribe, support quality sports journalism. On Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress, Mr. Fentress. On this final Thursday of September, how you doing?
I'm depressed.
The Cubbies!
Down and choked. Oh my goodness. I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, at least they really made it a torture. I mean, they set a record for most consecutive one-run losses in a series, and it's just what a misery, huh?
But remember in 2016 when I tell you, I said there's a 5-year window, just give me one. They gave me the one that first year. I'm going to take this like a man. Just realize they still have a good nucleus. They have a bunch of money under their payroll threshold this offseason. So there's still hope, but this year was bad.
Yeah, well, every 108 years, so when you come on the show in 2124, we'll be celebrating another one. Let's start with Oregon. And I get the win last week, not what you would consider a thing of beauty, but it was Stanford, a program who has a history of making Oregon miserable on the road, where the Ducks have been bad in recent years. And I'm like, we're not that removed from the misery of 2016. So whether it be fans or people talking about it, I don't know. We haven't reached the point where we're taking wins like that for granted just yet, are we?
Oh, you mean, well, it depends on from which side of the fence we're looking at. I would say no. I think there was a time when people were taking a lot of things for granted. But I think at this point, given what has gone on the past few years and how Stanford has just owned Oregon up until last year when Oregon kind of blew it and they lost overtime. But no, that's a good win. That's a good win. I mean, who cares if Stanford's down? Stanford didn't care when Oregon was down, right? They pummeled and then talked about it. So this is a good one for Oregon. No two ways about it. I'm just not sure it means that much in terms of trying to win the conference, because clearly Stanford's not the team a lot of people thought they were coming into the season. Now, actually, most people had reservations about them. They yeah. lost a lot of talent. So we were kind of sort of waiting to see what they would be. And what they are is not very good. But I still say, you know, hey, it's still Stanford. It doesn't matter.
No, that's a fair evaluation. Offensively, I thought what you wrote about earlier this week about Justin Herbert, also a prime topic on this show among a lot of the callers and texters, and you asked the question, is it time to take the bubble wrap off and allow this guy who's so strong and such a good athlete to add the running element in there? So what's your take?
You know what, I'm a little torn, but I'm leaning on the side of if it's wide open, if you run zone read and there's no one out there, take it. And then if when the defense converges on you, slide. That's what I'm advocating for. I'm not saying they should run him. Like, Tagger was pretty aggressive with him. Tagger was trying to do with him what he did with Flowers at South Florida, just let him be a part of the offense. And he had some. I remember at Arizona State, they had him going up the middle on some outside zone read, just take it off up the middle, one for 18 yards. I put a video in my article about that. And then, you know, the touchdown where he got injured, that was just a basic zone read. It was wide open. He took off, and no one's going to slide near the goal line. Like, that was one of those things where it's like, you can find a video of Tom Brady diving into the end zone. If Tom Brady can dive into the end zone, then any quarterback should be able to dive into the end zone. He just had a bad luck and got injured, and I don't think you can really account for that. It's football. But I think I've seen a couple times so far this season in two games that matter, Stanford and Auburn, where he could have kept it and taken off. Well, And Auburn, against Auburn, no. Those guys are too athletic, they would have tracked him down. But it was one time in particular against Stanford where I think he could have gained 7-8 yards. And I think they need to add that into it just so they can pick up those cheap yards because they're struggling in other areas of their offense.
One last thought on the Ducks. I mean, you know, you think about this defense, you know, from Gangrene to Wesley Mallard and those guys during the Joey years to the defense that had to work in concert with Chip's blur offense. I'm thinking, and it's early, this Andy Avalos hire could end up being a home run. There's just a different look. They seem in better position, better tackling. And again, 4 games in, what's your evaluation so far of this defense you're seeing?
Okay, so here's my take on this. Number one, all you can ask a defense to do is keep teams out of the end zone. And the last three have not reached the end zone. It doesn't matter who they played, they kept them out of the end zone. So even if people say, like me, you know, that the competition, Montana, Nevada, who cares? Stanford's offense is weak and they're down on top of that. So is it really that impressive? Well, what more can they possibly do? Shut them out? You know what I mean? That's a lot to ask in college football, to shut someone out. They held them to 5 field goals. That's about as good as it gets. So they are performing as an elite defense should perform. However, why is there always a however with me?
Not you.
I'm gonna name it however. Aaron, however, Fentress. No, but however, to me, one of the, like, people are comparing them to some of the great defenses in Oregon history. I'm going to say, you know what? To me, if you're a championship caliber defense, you don't let a freshman quarterback drive the field on you to score a touchdown in the last minute with 9 seconds to go. A true freshman quarterback who's been struggling most of the game. Like, that to me is like, okay, why did that happen if you're so great? Also, no one can discount how much pressure it puts on a defense to face a quarterback that can push the ball downfield with accuracy. They have not faced anything remotely close to that yet. So when they face teams that can actually pass the ball downfield, you know, complete passes to receivers downfield, that's going to change everything. And then we'll see how this defense reacts. And that's when they'll truly prove to us how great they are.
Talking with Aaron H. Fentress of The Athletic. moving to the NFL, you're a big analytical guy. You know, Bill James brought sabermetrics to baseball. You like to take a deep dive into the numbers. And you're working on this deal with teams who pass a lot, how it translates. You know, I look last year, the Steelers, Colts, Packers, and Bucks threw it the most. You're calling it volume passing. What are you up to, and what have you discovered?
Okay, so here's the thing. So I've had many debates with people at The Athletic already about, you know, the run versus the pass. And there's this all-out war on the running back and on running, and if running is even worth it, how stats show it's more efficient to score points by throwing, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like people are ignoring that regardless of how successful you are at passing the ball, if you can't run the ball well, it's going to cost you come playoff time. I think that's just an absolute fact. The Super Bowl last year was won by the team that ran all over the Chiefs and the Rams to win the Super Bowl. That was the Patriots. Now, I'm writing about the Seahawks facing the air raid with Kyler Murray and what they're trying to do, which is an offense that's built around volume passing. They're leading the league in pass attempts. Rookie quarterbacks, so you're not going to judge them by their proficiency yet. But my question is, when in history has this led to Super Bowl wins? So I went and looked, and I kind of had an idea about this anyway, but I hadn't looked this deep before. So get this stat. Of the top 70 all-time passing performances in season, in a season-long pass performances in league history, only one ended up leading to a Super Bowl title.
Wow.
Out of 70. Out of 70. That one was Eli Manning in 2011, of all people.
Amazing.
Drew Brees holds 7 of the top 20 single-season yardage records. He has one Super Bowl, right? That one Super Bowl actually came during his 11th most prolific passing season, and it ranked 85th all-time. Tom Brady's best came, he's won 4 Super Bowls. Not one of them included six Super Bowls. Not one of them included his top 4 passing performances. It was his 7th best passing year, and I think it ranked 77th all-time they won a Super Bowl. So you get my point. Even Peyton Manning had 2 monster years. His 06 year where they won a Super Bowl over the Bears, which I think that ranked like in the high 70s. And his biggest year with Denver, which ranked top 5, obviously they didn't win a Super Bowl. Now, not only one out of 70 has won a Super Bowl, but think about this. That also means that everyone within that 70, when they lost along the way at some point, did not lose to someone else within the 70. So it's not like you can say, oh, well, they lost to someone else within the 70. No, if there's only one, that means all of them lost to someone out of the 70, except for Brady when he lost to Manning in that Super Bowl. So think about that for a minute. So the idea that all this high-volume passing leads to championships has never been proven to be true. Is it going to in the future? We'll see, but the past says no.
Well, it's interesting because you cover 13 with 3 guys, 11, Montana, Bradshaw, Aikman, who all went unbeaten, 11-0, and they were never known for the big passing numbers. So
exactly. And, even like Marino. Like Marino was putting up, people are acting like some of this stuff's new. Like some of these young guys, you guys don't remember Dan Marino threw 5,000 yards and 48 touchdowns back before Pat Mahomes was born. Like this,
yep.
Like throwing for a lot of yards and touchdowns is not anything. And you and I saw Dan Fouts and Eric Corey, but what happened in the playoffs? It gets colder, you shut down the passing game, and they can't run, and all of a sudden they're toast. So now some people are saying, a lot of people I debate with about this, saying, well, in recent years, rule changes have helped passing even more. How many times in our lifetime, Steve, have we seen some rule come along to help passing?
That's the only rule changes is the help passing.
Right. Right. So, but still, in the past 7-8 years even, we haven't seen the most prolific passing teams win the Super Bowl. It's the teams that come December and January have the running game to, A, keep the other teams passing offense off the field, B, keep their own defense off the field, and wear down the opposing team's defense, which is what happened to the Rams and the Chiefs, the 2 most prolific passing teams last year, and the Patriots got hold of them. Now, the Patriots have Brady. It's not like the Patriots had chopped liver, but they ran the ball all over those 2 teams in conjunction with Brady when neither of those teams could run at all against the Patriots.
Well, I love me a deep dive into stats, so I'm all in on this. One last thought on the Seahawks, because I watched a bunch of that game Sunday, and if you just followed the score and didn't get the details, man, did you miss the whole picture, because there was a punt return, there was a scoop and score. I mean, they gave up only like 265 total yards. So for people who are saying New Orleans without Breeze came in and lit them up, that wasn't the truth. It just, the bottom line is, at home, it's just kind of an ugly game.
Yeah, in my Survivor League, I almost picked, I like 10 entries, so I'm going to play the safe. I almost put a couple entries on the Seahawks because there was no Breeze, but then part of me was like, you know what, though? That's still a Super Bowl contending team. Even though their quarterback's gone, that's still a damn good football team. And the Seahawks just barely beat the Steelers when Roethlisberger went out and barely beat the Bengals and Andy Dalton threw for 420. I was like, I don't know. I'm not going to risk a Survivor pick on this. And sure enough, Bridgewater comes in there and plays a great, you know, backup quarterback role in terms of managing the game. Don't screw it up. You get to screw it up. And then you get those things that happen in football, especially in the NFL. You get that punt return out of nowhere. You get that fumble, scoop, and score like you just mentioned. That's 14 free points right there. And that just swung the entire game. And on top of it, the Seahawks can't run the ball as well as they did last year so far. Now, they started out slowly last year as well. But on some third and short, fourth and short, key situations in that game, the Saints stuffed them. And that just destroyed them. They pretty much fell behind to the point where they couldn't come back. Now, they made a little run in the fourth quarter. That was all garbage fantasy time stats, right?
Right.
They didn't mean anything. So, yeah, disappointing loss for them because Breeze wasn't there. But all the players said, look, y'all may have thought it was going to be a cakewalk without Breeze. We knew that that was still a great team, that Teddy Bridgewater was a former first-round pick. They're a championship-caliber team all around, and, man, they just beat us today. We got to get better.
Yep, and now we'll take on Kyler Murray. Oregon's on
the
bye. Yeah, that should be interesting. Folks, is Aaron. Well, we're still going to go with Jay Fentress, the other substitute initial is pending for The Athletic on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Hey, good stuff, man. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right, later.
Take it easy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yeah, we want to get to the lightning round, so let's take a break right now. Come back, wrap up crunch time, 95.3 The Score.
People are going to look at Baker saying the thing again and say Baker needs to not say the thing because they're not winning. Baker was saying the thing when they were winning last year. Yeah. And we said, oh, you're winning because, and you can win with a brash young quarterback. And now they've lost through three games of the 2019 season. And we're saying, Baker, you can't say the thing and win.
Say the thing? What's the thing? Anyway, it's a classic case. Hey, you're winning? Talk all the hell you want. Start losing? Just a little bit. Still, I'd rather be with him than Team Rex Ryan, so screw that. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's wrap up the 3 o'clock hour with this.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
It's the last September lightning round. That means October's coming around. Should I be excited about my Yankees or are they going down with the lightning round?
Solid B+. That was very good. That was a really good round. And I know it's a Thursday, and that means it's a lightning round, but there's always some time for some crunch exchange questions during the lightning round.
Whoa!
And tonight is the last start of Felix Hernandez's career in Seattle. One last time, the Kings Court will come together at Safeco Field with their yellow shirts, their signs, and for some reasons, really big turkey legs.
And big ERAs.
He debuted at 19 years old, and he went 4-4 with a 2.57 ERA and did nothing but put everything into the game for the Mariners, leading the league in wins in 2009, winning the Hale Cy Young in 2010, and then pitched the first and maybe only perfect game against the Rays in 2012. He was a 6-time All-Star, and he had 2 ERA titles. He's the all-time leader in WAR, wins, innings, strikeouts, starts, and tied with like 4 other Mariner greats for ERA, which is just incredible. He's the best Mariner pitcher of all time, and unfortunately, due to Mariner-ness, he has never pitched in October. It's really the only negative in the Ace's career, and yes, his ERA has been climbing the past couple of seasons, but that happens with everybody who isn't Justin Verlander when they hit 31-32. But with this being the end of Felix's career in Seattle, maybe the end of his career in Major League Baseball, it brings up the eternal question with players as good as Felix when they retire. Are they Hall of Fame worthy? It took Edgar Martinez 10 years to get into the Hall of Fame, and that could have been because of Seattle or he was a DH. And with Felix being as dominant as ever in his prime, but literally having nothing on his October resume, that's going to be quite the knock. The lightning round prospectus, Felix Hernandez will be in the Hall of Fame.
Oof, you know, the one loss record will never pop because of the team. The 3-4 ERA, not good. Not even a strikeout, an inning guy. His whip ended up skyrocketing because of the last 4 years. So right now, I'm voting no.
The Los Angeles Chargers of Carson, California got a huge boost today when Melvin Gordon announced he would be returning and getting ready to play next Sunday when they take on the Broncos at home. The Charger Clippers are 1-2, losing in the most Chargers fashions ever to the Lions and the Texans. Really the only way they know how. Down by one score, Phillip Rivers with the ball. They've got no timeouts, and it's just mayhem. How ready will Gordon be? Will he immediately be added into his old spot in the offense? Will this make any difference because we are just talking about the Chargers. So Melvin Gordon's return to the Chargers is a big, little, or no deal.
It's a little deal that could grow into a big deal if he starts putting up big numbers. But the fact that they really showed no interest in negotiating with him kind of speaks volumes.
A smedium deal. Yeah. The NFL came up with a dumb idea to expand their season to 18 games earlier this year. It involved players getting 2 bye weeks, which is exactly what you want to have happen more in the NFL. See more backups playing. Now the NFL has made a major pivot. 17 game seasons. What brilliant minds we have running the franchises in the NFL. This would also come with reducing the preseason down to 3 or potentially 2 games, and it wouldn't happen until the end of the current CBA that ends after the 2020 season, which is after the Super Bowl in February of 2021. This new report doesn't say anything about individual player bye weeks, so that's at least one bonus, but does the NFL really need more games? Does adding an extra game just for the sake of adding an extra game really make sense? The NFL's new 17 game proposal is blank.
Gonna happen.
Oh,
I really believe that. I think it's a perfect split. It's about more money. Ain't nobody turning that down. Another regular season game. You still get your 3 preseason games. I really believe, and that doesn't mean I'm in favor of it. You're just asking me what I believe. I think it's going to happen.
Last one real quick. Jalen Ramsey had a wild 2 weeks. He yelled at Doug Marrone on the sideline, requested a trade, was almost sat during a game on a Thursday so he could be traded to play the same week. He had a good game that game, then used up some sick games because he said he had the flu. Then he said he had a bad back. Now he's not going to be playing at all because he's going to be in Nashville for the birth of his child. And watch out for that flu that's going around Jacksonville. It's called sick of being a Jaguar-itis. Jalen Ramsey's week was blank.
Well, it was strange that his EPT came back positive. It was an emotional roller coaster of half truths. How about that?
Fair enough.
All right, break time. We're back. 4 o'clock hour. We've got things we're going to do. What do we do now? Talking trash at the end of the 4 o'clock hour. And Paul Swangard talking about the World Championships of Track and Field in the Mideast coming next. 95.3 The Score.
What are we talking about?